Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us on the program this week. My guest is West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. We'd love to have your questions for him during the next half an hour. Call 765-496-1999. Email ask at WBAA.org and tweet us at WBAA News on Twitter. How are you? Good to see you again.
I am peaches and cream.
You always say, I need to stop asking that question.
So your fault.
It is. It is totally my fault. All right.
There you go.
Well, let's go on to something more substantive. A listener has called in and said that Mary Jo wants to know, what are the plans for Lindbergh Road between Northwestern and Salisbury? Do construction plans there include a new bike lane?
Yes. That road is, and I think I've mentioned this before on the show, we have a survey that we do for our streets every year. It's always updated. And that survey basically does kind of an engineering analysis of what's up with our roads, what kind of conditions they're in, how much overlay we've put on. And you kind of go through those different sort of categorizations as to when you actually are going to just pave over or when you're going to actually do the from curb to curb of tearing it out and putting a new one in. And we're about ready to do that with that stretch of Lindbergh. And as you know, any time that we're in a position to be able to do it and we've got the space to do it, we always put a trail in there. And so I haven't met with our engineer yet about our construction plans for the season this year, but I know Lindbergh has been on our target. We did a micro layer over it a couple years ago, and that's lasted about as long as it's supposed to. So I'm sure that if it's in pretty rough shape, it's on our inventory, and when we do get it, we'll go ahead and put a trail there.
Reminder, if you want to ask your questions of West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis on Ask the Mayor today, email ask at WBAA.org, tweet at WBAA News on Twitter, or call us 765-496-1999. I want to spend a little while talking about those bigoted banners that were found at a West Lafayette church a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. First, let me ask, has your police force made any headway in catching the person or people responsible?
Not yet. The hardest thing about doing that stuff, and I guess one of the things that really does sort of focus on how cowardly these people are, is it's really difficult to track that down. Unless they leave some form of evidence on the banners themselves, it becomes a real challenge. What they've done is they've worked cooperatively with the FBI using some of the forensic technology to see if there's any trace of anything that we can pull up. And as I just spoke to Chief Domkowski this morning about it, they haven't had any results back yet.
Does that mean they're still testing?
Testing, but they're still going over the product to see what they can pull off. The other thing is that there's this presumption that if you find a fingerprint or if you have some sort of body fluid there that you can get DNA from, that you can immediately identify who that person is. And the drag about that is that, you know, modern day, you know, TV has sort of led us to believe those things, but it doesn't really work that way in real life. Fingerprints, DNA, and other physical evidence that you can pull off of a crime scene are good to have in a database, but if you don't have anything to match that up with, then it's still just something in a database. So hypothetically, if somebody did leave some type of identifier on that particular piece of evidence and they've never been arrested before, then we basically just have one half of the solution. Until we such time that we can find another something to match it with, we still won't know who it is.
So let me ask you about that for a second, because this incident was similar in tone, in language, and I feel obligated to say in poor grammar and spelling to an incident from last May, mm-hmm. in which there were posters with nails that were discovered. Mm-hmm. Both of these indicate the possibility of violence. Mm-hmm. Is there anything you can take from the language, the writing, absent any DNA that allows you a way to try and find whoever this person or group of people is?
Yeah, there is kind of – you can do that. The similarity of messaging is obviously a very, very easy way to go. But back in my other life, I had the – privilege, question mark, exclamation point, to do some work, some undercover work with some of the hate groups that were coming to the city of Lafayette back in the late 80s, early 90s. And these groups, sometimes we have a tendency to allow a belief system which makes them seem more sophisticated than really what they are. You know, these groups of people – And I'm trying to be better today than I was when I gave the article to the Journal and Courier. So do you have a 5-second delay?
We do not. And so if you could avoid saying the F word on our air like you did to the JNC, I would appreciate that.
You know, not just to of all the things that I've done, I've been involved in doing stuff with the media for like 30 plus years now. First off, I've never slipped like that before. And second off,
was it a slip or was it?
It was a slip.
It seemed kind of deliberate.
Well, I mean, I was mad, so it was a deliberate slip, if that's possible. And in all fairness, Bangert said, you know, I gave him the standard, you know, cookie cutter elected guy quote, and then after I said what I said the first time, and Dave said, well, you know, I'd really like to use that first quote, and I said, you can't. You'll get busted if you put that in the newspaper. And I said, we can make it, you know, palatable.
Sanitized,
yes. And I kind of thought about it for a second. And then I said, you know what? I think it's time. This has enraged me to the point where I think I'm comfortable with that. And then I sort of segued into that. You know, I wish more elected officials would have that kind of internal or intestinal fortitude. I use another descriptor that I can't use on the radio either, and stand up for what they truly believe in. So I did that, and it kind of went where it went.
So I've got to ask, in terms of having the guts or whatever to say what you believe, mm-hmm. expressing your outrage, mm-hmm. where does that translate to actually trying to keep people safe, especially for someone like you, who mm-hmm. you just said yeah. has experience mm-hmm. in an undercover situation as yeah. a law enforcement officer with hate groups? Mm-hmm. You would seem to be somebody who knows this mm-hmm. MO fairly well, and yet mm-hmm. there's question marks still about whether we're any closer to catching the people who did this.
Well, and to kind of go back to where we were a little bit ago, these groups really aren't that sophisticated. Some of them on that national level, when you see the Grand Dragon all dressed up in his hood and spewing his venomous hate, you know, they might have a little more structure and organization to what their involvement is. But a lot of that, and it's really true, a lot of that is just loners and one-offers, or maybe a couple people who really just – they really don't belong anywhere else, and they're looking for a way to draw attention to an issue that for this moment in time in their otherwise miserable life that they'll get attention for. And that's why oftentimes when events like this happen, there's a lot of influence on people that are responsible for other people to leave it alone, to don't give these groups any attention. And obviously, I didn't take that advice. You know,
well, and I have to ask about that, too, because this is something that we've heard from Purdue President Mitch Daniels when we've talked to him about the now half a dozen or more incidents of white supremacist literature mm-hmm. and other things that have shown up on the Purdue campus. And that's exactly what he's told me is, I don't want to give these folks any more publicity than I have to. Mm-hmm. But I have to say, it sure does not seem like that stratagem is working, because mm-hmm. this stuff keeps happening mm-hmm. and there doesn't seem to be enough of a disincentive to stop people from spewing this, what I think you correctly term as hate.
Mm-hmm. It's true. And, you know, how somebody chooses, whatever course of action somebody chooses, I mean, that's up to them. I'm an elected guy, and in my position, I'm responsible for my community. And I've lived here all my life, and I love this place, and I love the people that make up my community. And when something like that happens, it angers me. And I am not going to sweep it away. I'm going to respond. I'm going to respond immediately, and I'm going to respond with the type of anger and the type of action that somebody in my position should do.
Well, this is kind of what I'm asking is do you think it's time to change tack, whether it's just you, whether it's you and the Purdue community? Because previously it's been, if we just don't pay it, it's like the schoolyard bully. If you mm-hmm. just don't pay attention to them, they'll stop bullying you, they'll mm-hmm. go away. Mm-hmm. That's not happening around here. There is becoming this increasingly pronounced set mm-hmm. of actions that have happened. And is it time to change your tack and say, look, we're going to be a little more forceful about saying, whoever you are, you don't belong here?
Yeah, I do. I think that standing up against hate is not just our job. It's our duty. It's as a human, you got to say, knock that stuff off. But think about somebody who reads that. There's some horribly offensive identifier in the message, and that identifier is specific to you, to
sure.
your race, to your creed, to your belief system, to your gender, whatever. And somebody in a leadership position says, yeah, we're just going to, you know, just don't do that anymore and just hope it goes away. You know, personally, I can't do that. You know, I don't believe in that. And I think that as a mayor, I'm going to be at the tip of the spear fighting for my community.
So I have to be direct here, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but...
But you do it all the time, Stan.
What's going to change? What are you going to do? Give me a physical action, or better yet, set of actions mm-hmm. that you, your city, your police department are going to take to make this place as unpalatable as possible for hate groups.
If I had the exact answer for that, I probably wouldn't be here today talking on the radio station. I'd be doing something, making bunches of money. To control people's emotions, to control how people believe, what their belief systems are, whether it be the most repulsive, vile hate, or whether it be the most benevolent and wonderful faith-based group or association, it's what we're all about. It's humanity. The individual cannot do much about that, but the collective, the group can. We have proven here in West Lafayette that we don't put up with that stuff. We have proven here in West Lafayette that we're a community that's based on togetherness, welcoming environments, and love, and we do it every day. You know, when a hate group comes to this community, maybe that's why they target us. Maybe they think if I come to West Lafayette and I put up a sign that's filled with a bunch of crap, they're going to respond. I'm going to get national attention. This made it on the Washington Post, USA Today, and the rest of the outlets. If that's what they want, okay. Maybe that fraction of their interest will be satisfied. But in my community, we're going to unify, we're going to get together, we're going to heal the wounds, and we're going to make sure that whatever we can do to control that, we will. But it takes nothing. It takes just one lost soul with a magic marker and a bit of white paper to do just as much harm as those banners did a couple of weeks ago.
So let me ask, because I don't have the law enforcement background that you have, if this person is a loner, as mm-hmm. you say, if they might stand out like a sore thumb in a certain respect because they're so different from the people around them, mm-hmm. and if, as you say, that possibly makes them unsophisticated in the way that they are going about it, mm-hmm. do those characteristics mean that it should be possible to find this person or this group of people? Because after all, you know, the one bad apple in the bunch, mm-hmm. maybe there's a way that they stand out.
Mm-hmm. It's true. And back in the day when I was doing the stuff when the Klan came to Lafayette, we had profiles on not just the Klan members, but also on the folks that stood in protest against the Klan. These two groups would follow each other around the country. The protesters would all be pretty much the same group, and the Klan would always be the same group. And one thing that made them stand out, there was the obvious behavior that they did when they were doing, you know, their protesting or doing their displays, but as some of the social habits that they had outside of that, whether it was through recruiting, whether it was through smaller protests or smaller acts of aggression on a much smaller level. That's where we would find out who these folks are. Same thing applies with something like this. Let's explore one hypothetical that these are just a bunch of bored high school kids from somewhere else. They talk, you know, they brag about what they've done. And eventually that makes it up the food chain to somebody in a position of authority where they can then take action. The other side of it is, if it is a more organized group, if it is a legitimate wing of one of our hate groups, they do that and they are sworn to secrecy and they never mention that. Even their membership sometimes is cloistered in secrecy. You know, you might not even know who they are.
But if you have this history of looking at other identifying mm-hmm. factors, other identifying behavior, mm-hmm. it seems like, you know, the history of the, for instance, the KKK mm-hmm. in Indiana is long.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, 150 years long. If you have that sort of knowledge of what people who spew this kind of bigotry do, mm-hmm. is there a way we can better use that knowledge to try to find whoever is responsible for this or the white supremacist posters mm-hmm. on campus?
Well, that's one thing about this particular event. They made a reference to a January 23rd concert with Jackson Browne. That's a little bit off message. I mean, normally it's just they identify all their particular groups that they're not satisfied with and they put some venomous words up there and they leave it and run. This had a little bit more specifics to it. It cited Las Vegas and then it also cited Orlando with the events that are going on there. That helps because again, it's a little bit off the standard product that they usually leave. So that does help, but then you get into a different level of who might it be? You know, we like to think that it's a Klan group, but you know, a lot of these white supremacist groups stay away from the Klan because they're too easy of a target. So they go into these subcultures within these broader groups, and it just becomes a big mess. And for us, when you're looking at trying to identify who this comes from, the basics of crime investigation is still how we follow. What evidence was left at the scene? Did anybody see anything? Anything that we can use as a potential identifier, a car or a license plate if we're lucky or something like that. And the one thing that's happening more and more these days is people are now putting cameras on their properties. And that's a real benefit for law enforcement because you now have that secondary observation, that ongoing vigilance, as it were, to be able to see what goes on.
Allow me to ask just the underlying question, and this is the same question that I asked Charlie Davis, the pastor at the church. Do you think that your community and Greater Lafayette in general has a problem with race-based hate, with bigotry, et cetera?
I'm going to say no, but I'm going to say no with a caveat. I don't think that we're a hotbed for racism. I don't think that we attract racists to our community, but I think that we're a learning community. I think that there are a lot of lessons that we still need to learn as a caring, loving, holistic society. I think that there's a lot of microaggressions and dog whistles and things like that that go on that we're completely unaware of, and I think that we're in a transitional period, not just here in West Lafayette or Purdue University, but societally. And I think we are learning lessons from the mistakes that we have made that were sanctioned mistakes from a few decades ago. I mean, look at cartoons from the 60s, sexism, racism, all kinds of stuff. And we're getting better every year. Will we ever be completely at that point where we're perfect? Well, hell no. No, nobody's perfect.
So if I follow your logic to its next conclusion,
if you do, you're really better eat your Wheaties.
What you're saying is you said actually something different than Charlie Davis said to me. His answer to me was, our race problem is the same as anywhere else in the United States, which mm-hmm. I think has some merit to it. But what you seem to be saying is you don't have a race problem, but at the same time, if you follow that logic along, mm-hmm. then what you're saying to me is you believe your community is being targeted in some respect, and you seem to be arguing that it's targeted because of the acceptance of the community or something like that. Mm-hmm. I suppose you can make that argument about, for instance, the Unitarian Universalist Church mm-hmm. that was targeted for this most recent round mm-hmm. of bigotry because they are an activist community. They are left-leaning. Mm-hmm. They are outspoken about all sorts of different types of inclusion. Mm-hmm. And so if you're a hate group, that's a logical target. Mm-hmm. But a community is a slightly different calculus. Mm-hmm. If you're looking at an entire community of people, you have to think a little bit differently about why you would target that community. I mean, mm-hmm. is this what you're saying, that you believe that your community is being targeted from outside of it?
Mm-hmm. Well, yes. And let me explain why. Because of where we are, because we have internationally, renowned university, because our population base is so diverse, because we have a fairly well-educated population base. When you look at that, again, remember, some of these guys really aren't bumbling idiots. They have some level of sophistication with their hate. When you look at that, and if your intent is to, and I'm not trying to contradict myself, but if your intent is to gain attention or to at least rile up a community, if you target a community that might not have the same demographic that we do, you probably won't get that response. In some instances, a community that prides itself on being a welcoming and open community like we do, yeah, we're low hanging fruit for hate groups because they know they come here, they're going to get a reaction. But the second thing is first off, I do agree with Charlie. I do agree about racism being a huge issue. But my point was, is that we are still evolving in that regard. But back to the community. Yeah, I think so. I think that, when something like this happens, look at the attention that we've got. I mean, it's been national news. Look at the response that we've had in the community. Charlie opened up his doors for a public meeting, a town hall meeting. There were about 800 people that showed up. Not only couldn't you find a place to park, but you couldn't find a place even within the church. The pews were filled. The balcony was full. We had the overflow room. It was full. This community cares. And still, I think we need to remember that one of the messages that we took from this awful event was we're going to come together when these things happen.
And I agree with that. But I have to say, and I want to move on to other things because I don't want this to be the entire show. I have to say that's still a reactive response rather than a proactive response.
And I agree, Stan, but I don't know how to do that.
Right, and I look forward to talking with you on future shows mm-hmm. about what hopefully the proactive mm-hmm. response to stopping future things like this is going to be. But let's move on to other things.
Okay.
By the way, this is West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis on Ask the Mayor here on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Call in your questions, 765-496-1999. Email them to ask@wbaa.org. We talked on last month's show about the closure of a grocery store on the mm-hmm. Purdue University mm-hmm. campus and about how the owners might actually keep that lease, even though the space might stay vacant. I wondered if there was an update on that. We should say it has since closed.
Yeah.
And there was some talk from at least one city council member who kind of boldly claimed, no, we're not going to let this happen. It happened. What is the city doing at this point?
Well, it goes into that age-old story about developers and property and profitability and all that kind of stuff. I think we talked about this last month. You know, we were surprised, as the population was, when everybody decided to jack their stuff up and head out.
I guess what I'm asking is what are the next steps?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The space itself is a value. I mean, it is in a prime location. Eric Carlson, our director of development, is working very hard on getting some contacts of folks that are interested in moving in there, and there are some that will be moving in there. My suspicions are that space will not stay vacant very long. The other thing is, and this is something that always, and I'm not trying to cop out, when you talk about development, it is always double super secret stuff. The developers don't want to show their hands too quickly for the potential of losing the per square foot cost of a rental space. They don't want to bring in any unnecessary competition and those sort of things. So when you ask local government guys about what's going in there, they'll give you the same sort of evasive answer that I just did. But then we say things like, but two thumbs up. We're very optimistic. Good things are going to be happening. So, hey, Stan, two thumbs up.
So does that mean that the previous tenants remain in control of the lease? Do they get some say in what goes in there, or does the city have control of that?
Kind of a little bit of both. They signed an agreement to where they're going to be paying that lease for a few years into the future. So obviously it's in their best interest to get somebody in there that's going to absorb that cost. We as a city are pretty particular about what we would support. Just period. We do that. That's why we have the 231 overlay thing that's going up at the Westside Library this evening. That's why we had the overlay at New Chauncey. We want to make sure that we have a voice in what's going to go on in our community outside of just being purely capitalist and asking everybody to give us money and come in. Same thing applies there. If it doesn't fit well, it won't succeed. And when you look at that area, it's predominantly pedestrian. You've got a lot of rental property, a lot of houses and neighborhoods in that particular area that it co-joins with. So we want it to be something that's going to be of value to the community that it serves in that particular pocket of West Lafayette. We encourage that. We can talk to people. We can talk with the property owners who are still paying the lease and make sure that they understand that. And again, if we say, hey, we know a guy who's going to put something in there and it's going to be in all of our best interests, they're probably not, my presumption is that they would be supportive of that.
Let me ask a quick follow-up question. A couple of months ago, in the middle of last year, when a bunch of Marsh stores closed, yours in West Lafayette just off of Sagamore Parkway mm-hmm. was one of the ones that closed. A lot of people have been wondering what to do with that. Some people have suggested make it the new City Hall.
Yeah.
Are there plans for that property while we're talking about grocery stores?
Yes. Again, without showing too many cards, there are some folks that are interested in that. There's still some back and forth to be done, but I am
interested in keeping it a grocery store.
I'd like it to be something that's going to serve that portion of our community as well. And a grocery store has always been very well received in that area. But I'm cautiously optimistic that the lights will be on there within the next few months.
Okay. On to a couple of other things. Last month, you held some public input sessions about the possibility of a new aquatic center in the city. The city is still trying to decide whether it wants to spend the $25 million that it would likely have to try and do this, but it wants, for instance, you've heard Larry Oates and Eric Carlson and others say, but this thing has to be self-sustaining for us to really go ahead and do this. Have you decided anything from this initial round of public meetings, whether you think that's possible and whether you think there's enough public support for instance, membership dollars to make it self-sustaining, or do you still need more info?
Well, more info is going to be better, but the interest that's been generated from the sensing sessions that we've had has been nothing short of phenomenal. It's kind of cool because you have these things, and I'm an old Parks and Rec guy. When I was a little kid, used to play around all the things around here on West Side, and the changes that have come for what the expectations are and the age demographics and how particular they are. You know, seniors really, really dig on pickleball. The younger want to have more interactive, like basketball and swimming and those sort of things. And so we're actually getting a better idea of not just how to treat the rec center concept, but also how to treat our park system in general. So there's that kind of net gain on that end. But yeah, I think build it and they will come, but the question of build it, will they pay to come, is still yet to be responded to. Because how do you set that rate? I mean, we know how much it's going to cost, and we know how much we're going to need to generate from it. And if the programs aren't popular, nobody will show up. So we're still going through that process. It's going to take a little while longer to get it sorted out, but right now things are going pretty well.
It's one of the interesting things that happened at those sessions was you gave people a piece of paper and said, you have $25 million. It's going to cost about $4 million to procure the property and put the building up, and now you have this remaining $21 million to put in it. I want to know if anyone has come to you before right now with the solution that I'm going to propose to you, which is you gave an amount that everything would cost that you could put in, and you said you fill that $21 million however you want. It turns out if you don't put in a pool of any sort, you can pay for literally everything else on the list.
Oh, yeah.
How about that?
Man, that is a rock star stuff.
Especially
if you could convince 75,000 people that that's a good response.
Well, I mean, you can convince them that, for instance, Purdue has a world-class aquatic facility that already exists in West Lafayette.
Oh, yeah.
Why would you reinvent the wheel?
Because this is one of those things that I never really thought about. I'm not a swimmer. I like getting wet, but swimming, I'm not good at that stuff. But the groups, we have swim leagues, we have swim clubs, we have at the athletic programs at the schools have different things. The number of citizens in West Lafayette that absolutely are so passionate about water sports completely blew my mind. That was a real surprise to me. And we started having this realization some years ago when the West Lafayette High School pool was needing some work on it. And then again, when Purdue, with the Purdue clubs and the Purdue swim team, when their pool is getting maintenanced, there's different groups that are really hungry for having those options, another option for a pool. You're looking at the clock. Are you telling me to hurry up?
It's just about that time.
Ah, man, this one went too quick.
As always happens, we run out of things, but that means there will be stuff for next month. So I look forward to continuing some of these conversations. Thanks, as always, for your time, and we'll do it again next month.
Thank you, Stan.
This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Remember to tune in at this time next week for our conversation with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rzeworski. Send questions at any time to any of our four mayors. ask@wbaa.org is our email address. And remember that you can find all these shows archived at our website, WBAA.org. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.